Good morning, everybody. Parshat Noach. So we'll start with number one. Quite a familiar Rashi. The Torah tells us that Noah was Ish Tzadik Tamim Haya Bidoro Tav. He was a righteous and pious person in his generation. And the question is, what is the word Bidoro Tav? He was a pious person, so why do we have to be told he was pious, he was a tzaddik in his generation? So there is a familiar Rashi on this, and that's where this picks up. This is a comment of the Maral Miprag in his Gur Aryeh on the Parsha. And he quotes Rashi first of all. Yesh me rabotenu dorshim oto lishvach. There are those rabbis who say that Dorotav is to his praise. In other words, if he could be a tzaddik in such a terrible generation, kol sheken, all the more so, she'ilu haya bedor shel tzadikim, haya tzadik yoter, he would be a bigger tzaddik. Right? So that's what it means. That Noah was a tzaddik in that awful generation. So that means he was such a great tzaddik, even if he lived in a generation of tzadikim. V'yesh shedorshim oto lignai. But there are those who darshan this, who explain this in the opposite direction. Lefi doro haya tzadik. You know, he was living in that low generation, so there he's considered a tzaddik. You know, v'ilu haya bedoro shel Avram. But if he would live in the generation of Avram Avinu, you know, lo haya nechshav l'klum. He wouldn't even, you know, he wouldn't even get a bus ticket, right? So that's the Rashi. Now, I just want to point out something interesting. If you notice in this Rashi, you have to look at every word. He says, "Yesh me rabotenu dorshin oto lishvach." There are some rabbis who explain this positively in his favor, and then he says, "V'yesh shedorshim oto l'gnai." And there are those who are more critical. But it's interesting how Rashi says he uses the word rabotenu. There are the rabbis, you know, are given the benefit of the doubt. The glass is half full. Yesh, he doesn't say rabbi. Yesh shedorshim. But there are people, not rabbis, there are people, common people, you know, who say the glass is half empty. Just an interesting point here that Rabotenu is not stated by the half empty glass, the critical glass of Noah. But the Maral here has an interesting comment on this, and he says the following. We're just on number one, second paragraph. Bir Dvarav. Davar Pasha. Let me explain this Rashi. It's not what you think he's saying. Because the truth is, he says, the afilu manda omar lishvach, even the rabbis who are praiseworthy, that, you know, Noah was a tzaddik bedoro tav, and all the more so in another generation, sover nami, they also hold the ilu haya bedoro shel Avraham, if he would live in the generation of Avraham, lo haya nechshav l'klum. He also would be a low man on the totem pole. Because we actually have proof, Shahari Lekaman, later on, Katav Rashi writes, Shaya Noach Miktanei Amunah. Noach was from the little of faith. Noach was not from the great men of faith. You know, V'chein Leman Da'amar L'gnai, and according to the opinion, it says that Noach was a tzaddik in that generation, but you know, if he would have been another generation, he wouldn't be so good. So Vergamken, he also holds the ilu hayat bedor shel tzadikim, hayat tzadik yoter. He could also hold, it's not so clear in other words, it's not so clear. He could also hold that he'd be a tzadik. Why? Shasvar no tenke. It makes sense. If he's a tzadik in his, you know, in his low generation, why, the Seichel tells me, you know, that he'll be a tzadik when he lives in an even greater generation, right? So the Maral says it's not so simple. You know, you've got to read between the lines of Rashi. The halo ein mi shemafrilo, nobody's stopping him. You know, let's say he's a tzaddik in a bad generation. He comes to the generation of Avraham Avinu. Who's going to stop him from being a tzaddik? On the contrary, it'd be easier for him to be a tzaddik. So it's hard. We're hard pressed to say that he wouldn't be anything, right, in that generation. It's not so clear cut. V'adarav, just the opposite. Yesh lo milu mod. He has role models. He can learn from Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu. Ela Bezepligi, so what's the difference of opinion here? What's the difference of opinion of understanding Bidorotav? Mipnei Shemilat Bidorotav, the word Bidorotav, in his generation, Hayam Yuteret, it's an extra word. We don't need it there. It just could have simply said Noach was a tzaddik. Okay, therefore, Pirshu, what are they explaining? Shakatuv Bol Lameid, the Torah is coming to teach us, B'milat B'dorotav, with this word, in his generations, Lama Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Neis Im Noach V'Hitzilo Min HaMabul. What was the reason that God performed a miracle and saved Noah from the flood? Which was it? Lama Lamada Amar L'Gnai, the one who says that it was to his detriment, L'Gnai, that you know he wasn't so good that he lived in that generation. So where he holds, he still would have been good elsewhere. She hatzalato hu mipnei shebiachas ledoro hayat tzadik. The reason why he was saved was because in relationship to his generation he was a tzadik. V'gam letzadik yichasi hakadosh baruch hu senes. Even for a relative tzaddik, right? You know, the guy who's on death row, but he's the model inmate, right? But he's a relatively speaking, he's a tzaddik. You know, in that milieu, in that social environment, he's a tzaddik. So the point is, this opinion, this rabbi holds that even a relative tzaddik, you know, who's not an absolute tzaddik, a definitive tzaddik, but a relative tzaddik, God would have saved him. V'rayin is proof. Mimasha Amar Lot. We have a proof from Lot. Keshahayiti Eitzel Anshei Stom. Lot says, when I was by the men of Stom, Hayah Kadosh Baruch Hu Roeh Maasai U'maaseh B'nei Ha'ir. God looked at my, who I was, what my actions, and the actions of Stom, the people in that terrible city. V'hayiti Nir Tzadik Kedai Linatzel. And I looked like a tzadik, and Lot was no tzadik. But in comparison to the people of Stom, Lot was a tzadik. So he was a relative tzaddik, not an absolute, not a definitive tzaddik. So according to this opinion, God performed a miracle to save Noach, even will do that even for a relative tzaddik. Ulamanda Amar Lishvach, but the one who says, no, this is to Noach's great benefit, that even if he would live in Avram's generation, he'd be a great tzaddik, is the point. Mikevan she'ilu haya bedor tzadikim haya tzadik yoter. If he would live in Avram's generation, he'd even be a greater tzadik. Al kein nitzol, that's why he was saved. Shakadosh baruch hu machshiv ma'at tzikotav l'rav. Mikevan she'ein, you know, in other words, the bottom line is God saved him because he was an absolute tzadik. He was a definitive tzadik. That's the tension here. Will God perform a miracle and save the world for a relative tzadik or only for an absolute tzadik? And this will answer the question that everybody asks. Shemakshim. The Halo Rashi Pirish Mikodim. Rashi said, quote, Dohoel Vihizkiro Siper Bishvacho. Since I'm mentioning Noah's name already, you know, I'm going to tell you how great he is, right? Because it says, Ela Toldot Noach. And by the way, since I'm mentioning this generation, Noach Hayat Sadik, he was a righteous person. Vihine Lamandom Leganai. According to the individual who says that this statement is not complimentary to Noah, that he was a tzaddik only in his generation, nimza sheyesh kan alav kotz bo. This is not, what do you mean? Because I mentioned Noah's name, I'm mentioning his praise, you know? But he's not mentioning his praise, right? So amna l'masha kasavna, but according to the way we're learning, en kan kusha, this is not a question. De'en ha-pasuk bo l'saper lanu gnuto. The pasuk is not coming to tell us a critique on Noah. Ella may midata kodesh baruch hu. It's coming to tell us about more about God than about Noach. That's the bottom line here. The gamot tzaddik yichasi hakadosh baruch hu osenes. So the pasuk is coming. Noach was a tzaddik, but Dorotav is coming to tell us less about Noach, more about God. How does God operate? How does God operate in the world? Will he respond to a relative tzaddik, or will he only respond to an absolute tzaddik? That's the tension in Rashi that he brings up. Okay. Number two is from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and we're told about the generation of Noach, ki malea haaretz chamas mipnehem, that the entire world was full of chamas, violence, Hamas, gezel, really, is going to be the definition. Thievery. Pirush Rashi, lo nechtam gzar dinam ela al hagezel. The bottom, the last, the straw that broke the camel's back for God was gezel, was robbery, right? Everything else, and we know they were a totally immoral generation, the generation of Noah. But the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, the bottom line was gezel. That's how Rashi explains Hamas, violence, meaning gezel. Now, Rav Yaakov says, I have a problem with that. Amnam, I'm the Medrash Rav. If you look in our oral tradition, in the Medrash, Shekatab b'zeh aloshen, and I quote you, Ki mele'ah aretz Hamas, the land was full of Hamas. Amar Rav Levi, what's Hamas? Hamas zeh avodat kochavim. Hamas is idol worship. The people were idol worshippers. Hamas zeh gilui arayot. Hamas, that's immorality, perversion, sexual immorality. Hamas zeh shvichut damim. Hamas is murder. So here you have Hamas, according to the Chachmei HaMedrash, according to our rabbis, is the three cardinal sins, right? Gilui arayot, avodah zarah, and murder. So Hamas avodas chachamim shenemar. How do we know that it's idol worship? Kimla aretz Hamas. Ulechura teva. So I have a question here. Ma haraya mipasuk didan. What's the proof from our verse? Shemai ribi avodah zarah. That it's going by avodah zarah. Talking about idol worship. Adarabba lefi pshuto. According to the simple textual understanding, tevat Hamas koya gezel. Hamas really means robbery, thievery, and that's what Rashi says. So the question is really on the Medrash. How do the rabbis in the Medrash say it's talking about idol worship, murder, perversion? That's why the world was destroyed. The pasuk says, the verse says, you know, Hamas. There's a contemporary ring to it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So let's understand what's going on here. Right? Where are they? Well, I don't know. I'm not a student of Arabic, but maybe, I mean, I know how I would, where I would get it from. Right here, right? So let's see how he answers the question. Vahanira, let me suggest, shekavanat ha-medrash, here's the understanding of the medrash. Lulamedo tanu gizera, to teach us, gidra, rather, the boundaries, shel avodah zarah ma. What exactly is avodah zarah? What is literally translated strange worship, but avodah zarah is idol worship, right? Devadai ha-pasuk mayri b'gezel. It's clear that the Torah is talking about gezel. It's talking about the violent robbery, right? No respect for someone else's property. U'kemoshe darshu razels. The rabbis tell us, shehevi Rashi. Rashi quoted the rabbis. Shalzeh nechtam gzartinam. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Ela ima ha'aretz mele'ah hamas. However, here's the point. Listen well. If the world is malaya, it's full of gezel. Kilomar, shahachamas naase lemishpat haaretz. Hamas was the law of the land. Violence and robbery, that was the rule of the land. People, the law was steal. That was what was going on here. Az hareze avodah zarah. That is avodah zarah. That is idol worship. How? V'hainu, she'im ha'aretz kula hichlita levatel echad midinei ha'Torah. If the land made a decision to eradicate completely, to blot out completely one of the laws of the Torah, v'kiblu aleihem lehitnaheg al pidinim v'chukim chadashim, and to conduct themselves according to this new rule of law, im kein harei ein heim ovdei Hashem, they're no longer serving God, elo ovdim lemashu zar. They're serving something that is strange. That is avodah zarah. Avodah zarah means it's anything but God. The essence of our relationship with God is avodah. So the exact opposite of that is avodah zarah, strange worship. V'lamadnu yisod zeh midinei yira nidachat. Where do we learn this from? From the laws of the yira nidachat. The yira nidachat is one of the laws that we'll see as we go along in Chumash, of a city that is completely immersed in idol worship. The law is you have to destroy such a city. But what's interesting is, the afal pi de b'Torah, even though the Torah says, nichtava l'gabi yisur avodah zarah, that you destroy the city because of it's a city of idol worship, Mikol makom, what's the law? What's the halacha? Hu adin im hir achat hichlita levatel eze mitzvah yeshalem dina didach. Doesn't the city could make a decision? Forget about it. They could say we're not keeping Shabbos. The rule in this city is no Shabbat. That's an yarni dach. That's an yarni dach. Why? Haynu mikivan shehu nasik b'haskamat anshe hamakom memela, that was done with the understanding and the agreement of the people, right? Hari avodah zarah. It's avodah zarah. Doesn't matter what it is. Vizui kavanata medrash, and that's what the medrash is telling us. Dekivun de maleaha aretz chamas bifneim. Since the world was completely full of robbery, im ken ktiv kan avodah zarah. That's avodah zarah. That's clear cut outright avodah zarah. They're no longer worshiping God. They're worshiping themselves. They're worshiping this new rule of law, this new set of societal laws, which is contrary to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's avodah zarah. That's the point.
We have here in Haifa that they have public transportation on Shabbos, Zechil Shabbos. Do they have the din of Yirani Dachat?
No, they don't have a din of Yirani Dachat. I would think today, first of all, we need a Beit Din to Paskin on this kind of a halacha. But today, we say that people who are Mechal Shabbos really don't know. They're in the category of Tinok Shenishma. They really don't. But even a town council, a city council, they can take a vote. But really, today people are not on the level of people who really fully understand. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a response on a tshuva, and he says even if you would sit down with somebody and go over the 39 malachas of Shabbos, and they'd still be mechal Shabbos, there's still a tinei shenishma, because you can't expect someone to absorb the essence of Shabbos by a couple of hours of a lesson. It doesn't work that way. So today, we don't consider somebody a Baal Avodah Zarah, right? Or even less than that, there are other things involved. If someone was in the Chal Shabbos before I ask you, that he can't count him in a minyan, you know, and so on and so forth. But we don't go that far today. You know, we say that they're not yet Shomer Shabbat. That has to be our attitude, and we have to do more to bring people closer. Number three is from the Shari Arah. It's really not from the Shari Arah. The Shari Arah is a collection of textual interpretations on the Chumash. It's a fantastic work in many volumes by a rabbi, actually, who lives in Bnei Brak. And I just noticed as I was going through it earlier in the week, some comments on the Tzohar. Right, Noach is commanded to make a Tzohar for the Teva. And Rashi says two things. Yesh omrim chalon. Some say that it is a window. Was told to make a window in the Aron, in the Teva. V'yesh omrim evin tova hama'irileh. That he made a precious stone which physically provided light for them. Right? So just some interesting sources that he brings on this. And I think you'll find some news here in terms of our common Ivrit. Right? Mikoro Bereshit Rabbi says the source of this is a medrash in our oral tradition. The Yeshom, there are those who say Chalon Mamish, that he told him, build a window, make a window in the ark. V'Yeshom Shalaya Tzorach, he didn't need Lo Laor Hachama Bayom, because during the day they had the sunlight. V'Lo Laor Halavana Balayla, they had the moon at night, right? Ella Margalit Hayatalo, it was a precious gem. V'haya tole otoli hung it up, and b'shah shehi kea, when it was weak, hayodei shu yom, he knew it was daytime, when it wasn't so bright. This was the first chandelier of the Jewish people, right? Didn't come from Hungary, but it came from Noah, right? Hayayodei shu yom, he knew it was day. U'b'shah shehayetam avheket, when it shone, when it was bright, hayodei shu laila, he knew it was night. Okay, v'chein amar Rabbi Yochanan and the Sanhedrin and the rabbis in the Talmud say amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Noach, God said to Noach, kavabo avanim tovot u'margoliot, put together precious gems and stones, right? Kedei sheyu me'irot lechem b'tzahorayim, so it would shine in the afternoon, right? And he just in brackets here he says something interesting. I don't know if you're into gematria, but in the mathematical equivalence of the words, you know, each letter has a numerical equivalent, right? Like chai is a lucky number, as they say, because it's 18, yud is 10, chet is 8, right? And the word is life, chai, so it becomes a lucky number, I suppose, right? Interesting, by the way, you notice that in Israel, I don't know if it's the only country in the world, but every building that has elevators has a 13th floor. There are 13 floors in Israel, right? You don't see that in Chutz Laaretz.
Because it's a Christian thing.
Right. 13 to us, bar mitzvah. It's a good number, right? So there's 13 floors and elevators. Yeah. Did you ever see that? Did you ever notice?
Yeah.
You ever think about that? Okay, good. Okay. Pardon me?
Five-story buildings also have elevators.
No, I understand. But I'm saying an elevator that goes beyond the 13th floor in America, it goes from 11, 12, 14. That's the way they build. You know, that's the way they build. Anyway, just a tidbit, not necessarily a Torah tidbit. Okay, but he puts in parentheses here, V'yitzhar. V'yitzhar is gematria even la'ora, a stone for light. Ta'aseh, because that's what the pasuk says, you shall make, is gematria margalit tova me'od hayah. It was a very goodly stone. That's from the Baal HaTorim, right? I don't get excited about these gematrias because, you know, sometimes you go to a wedding and somebody gets up and speaks and he takes the names of the bride and the groom and the family name, their license plate, and then makes a gematria and a pasuk. You know, it's cute, but we have no mesorah with gematria. Gematria is one of the four areas of interpreting Torah. You know, we say pardes. The word pardes means an orchard. Pe is for pshat, textual understanding. Resh is remez, hint. Dalet is drush, homily. And shin, samech is sod, mysticism, Kabbalah. So pshat is textual understanding. Which is what we're trying to do here with this Tzohar. And Remez is hinting, is gematria. Gematria falls into the category of Remez. We have no Mesorah. We have a Mesorah in Pshat. We have a Mesorah in Drush. We have a Mesorah in Kabbalah, in Kabbalistic wisdom also. We have traditions. There are two specific ways of studying Kabbalah, two traditions that we have. But there's no tradition in Remez. It's anything goes. So that's why, you know, I don't get excited about it. But sometimes when you see a real gematria, you feel the truth in it. There are such gematrias. In fact, since we're on the subject, I'll mention one to you. It's not from this week's parsha, but in a few weeks we'll have Avraham negotiating with Ephron to buy a burial plot for Sarah Imenu, right? And they're negotiating. And Ephron says to him, Beiniu beincha mahi. You know, it comes out really, if you do the math and the shekels that they're dealing with, it's about $1 million in contemporary funds. So he says, you know, what was it? Mea kikar kesef? I forget, is that what it is? Beiniu beincha mahi. Between you and me, arba meot kesef. Arba meyot kesef beiniu bein chamai. 400 kikar of silver. What's that between you and me, Avram? You know? Now look at, here's the Remez. What's the middle letter of Avram? Resh. What's the numerical value of Resh? Anybody know? 200. What's the middle letter of Ephron? Resh. What's the numerical value of Resh? 200. 400 kikar kesef between you and between me. What's the big deal? So if you take the bay, the between, the letter between Avram and his name is 200. And the letter between in Ephron is 200 equals 400. Now that's a remez. That's a remez that I can see is true. It rings true. It rings true. You feel it, right? But this, okay, the Baal Turim was a great tzaddik, so we have to take what he says. But here's the next paragraph on Sohar, which I find to be interesting and I think is news for us in terms of our spoken Hebrew. Sohar, which is, we said that it's called it Sohar, right? And according to one opinion, it's a window, and another opinion, it's a light, right? That fly is getting around this room and not missing anybody here. Okay, Sohar, Milat, Sohar, Perusha, Or. Sohar, Sahar means light. V'chein tirgam unkulis, and unkulis translates it, nihur, right? Or is nahora. V'chein, here's the news, saharayim, what's the word we say for afternoon? Where does that come from? What's saharayim? Saharayim, Pirush Radak, the Radak, who is a Rishon, one of our early rabbis, who wrote a Sefer Hashrashim, who gives us the source of our Hebrew, who that, he says, who ha'et, Tzaraim is the time Shahaor Hayom Chazak, that the light of the day is strong. V'nikra Beloshen Shniim, it's doubled. Tzaharayim, double light, right? High noon, so to speak. Lefi Shahayom Nechalak Meoro Lishnayim, because the day is divided into two. The light of the morning, Mehaboker Va'ad Chatzi Hayom, Holech Va'or, it gets brighter and brighter from the morning until noon. Umechatzi hayom ulamalad, from noon upwards towards sunset, right? Holech va'arev, it becomes, you know, closer to evening, right? And arev, by the way, the word erev is mixture. There's a mixture. Erev is a mixture between light and dark until you get to lila.
Yerbuvia.
The word yerbuvia is a mixture, right? So erev comes Ibuvius from Erev. So here's Tzaharayim. That's the root of Tzaharayim, the double light, the noon. V'hat Tzaharayim hu ha'et she'or chazak bo mishnei tzadim. It's the time when the light is strong from before noon and afternoon. V'nirali loma, I want to suggest, v'lechein nikra ha'shemen yitzhar. You know, another Hebrew word for shemen is yitzhar. You know, I think there's a brand even. There's a brand of Shemen called Yitzhar, right? So you can say, what's that funny name for a brand? But it's a Hebrew word from the Chumash of oil is Yitzhar. Why? Mikevan sheyesh bo tchunat ha-meir. We know that oil shines. Hein b'tzurato ha-pnimit. Oil is a shiny thing, in it, essentially. D'haynu shemadlikim bo kedei la'ir. But it's used to bring light. You use oil, right? It also, you know, oil, you have oily skin, so to speak, it lightens up the skin. Okay, so that's a very interesting idea on this. We can understand, appreciate the Chazal that Rashi brought us. Now, number four, I mentioned that I'm going to try to bring once in a while this year some Hasidic interpretations. And I'm going to do that this morning. Number four is from the Shem Mishmul. The Shem Mishmul was the Rebbe of Sachetchov. His father was the Avnei Nezer, famous Hasidic Rebbe, famous Godol B'Torah. He died in 1911, actually. And his son is the Shem Mishmul, and the family name is Bornstein. And there are direct descendants who are living here in Eretz Yisrael, who were early people who came to Eretz Yisrael very early. Pre-48, descendants of the Shem Mishmul. In fact, there's a sefer called Noz Desha, which is already in its third volume, has been printed, and it's written by a direct descendant of the Shem Mishmul, and it's in memory of his son who fell in the Sinai campaign. He fought in the Sinai campaign. Okay, so here he talks about a little known personality in the Parsha, Haran. Who was Haran? Who was Haran? Not Haran, who was Aaron? Right? Vayamat Haran. Right? Haran was, anybody want to tell me who Haran was?
Brother?
What?
Abraham's brother.
He was Avram's brother. Exactly. Avram's brother, you know? You go through life being Avram Avinu's brother. You know, it's, you know, you're not really famous, that famous, right? But he was Abraham's brother. And what does the Medrash tell us about him? Anybody know what the Medrash tells us? You're doing good. The Medrash tells us that, what does the Medrash tell us? In the furnace. What about the furnace? He didn't make it. He waited for Avraham, according to one version, he waited for Avraham to go in and saw that Avraham, but he was debating, he wanted to go in. He had the desire to do it, but he didn't do it. When Avraham came out unscathed, he jumped in, and of course, you know, that's he didn't come out.
Why did he jump in the furnace anyway?
To show his faith, to show his faith in God. Now, there's another version of that episode, is that he was thrown into the furnace, and we're gonna see that now.
Somehow.
We're gonna see that now. Right, that makes more sense. So let's see how that works out, and let's see that Haran was potentially a great person, but never made it, and we'll see why. We'll see an interesting thing. Again, this is a Chassidish source, and he doesn't waste any time here bringing a Kabbalistic idea. Isa b'kisve ha'ari, in the writings of the holy Ari, Rav Yitzchak Luria, the great Mekubal, Shahayeta bo, in the Arizal, Shahayeta bo nishmat Aharon, Haran had the neshama of Aharon, Aharon HaKohen. In other words, the neshama from Haran went to Aharon. Okay? So we say he didn't waste any time. Now we're getting into mysticism a little bit, but we're not going to really delve into the transmission of souls. But let's leave it at that Haran's soul went eventually to Aharon. How do we see that? What do we see? What was so special about Aharon's soul? Umeyet kvod kedushat avi ha'admor, and from my holy father, the Avnei Nezer, shamati, I heard the following. Shenir mazze b'divrei chazal. This is hinted in the words of the rabbis. Hakorei la'aharon haron. There are some times that the rabbis refer to Aharon, you know, there's a short, like, you know, sometimes you call Abe, your son Avram, you call him Abe, right? Well, Aharon sometimes is referred to as Haran, without the Aleph, right? V'hine yiduim divrei maral. Now listen to this maral, we just saw maral, but listen to what the maral does. Sha'aron otiotav pinimiot. The letters of Aaron's name are internal letters. Hey b'yechidut. Hey, five. Hey is the middle letter of units, from Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, Yud. It's the middle letter, it's pnimius, it's internal. Resh, Bemeos. The letter Resh is internal. After Kuf, 100, Resh, you have between 1 and 300 is Resh, it's internal. Nun, Basiriot, and Nun is Mamish, the middle letter in tens, right? Nun is 50. So you'll have 10 is Yud, 20 is Chaf, etc. Nun is 50, right? So they're internal letters. Haran refers to internality, certain spirituality. V'yesh lomar, what's the Aleph? Sheha Aleph, Aleph is Aluf. Shebarosh Moro Shemeirbo Alufo Shel Olam, the master of the world, God. Hainu, Shehaya Tamid Dibuk Ba'Hashem Yisborah. Aaron was a very spiritual person. Aaron was Aaron HaKohen. He was into the internal, the deeper things, not the externalities, but the deeper, as he shows with Hey, Resh, Nun, the deeper meaning of life. But he attached it to godliness, to divinity. Ulefizeh Haran, Shahaita, right? Chaserabo ha'elef, Aleph. Haran was also a spiritual kind of a person. He was not a superficial person, Haran. In those days, names meant everything. In those days, we're talking about the beginning of the world. Names were everything. They bespoke the personality. So Haran was a deep spiritual person. However, without the Aleph. He was, you know, some free-wielding spiritual poet in San Francisco, right? He was a hippie. But he wasn't, there was no godliness to his spirituality and his poetry and his thinking. Ve'en bo rak ha'otiyot ha'pnimiyot. Morish Yehu Pnimi, definitely he was a deep kind of a guy, but he wasn't perfected, he wasn't complete like Aaron, he didn't attach his spirituality to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mikol Makom, that being said, HaPnimiyut Shebo, his internality, his spirituality, his depth, Haita Tova was a good thing, he had that depth. Val Kein, Hayu Tmunot Betocho, hidden within him, was tremendous potential. Kolo tam haneshamot, all those souls that were to come from him, neshamot kol haimaot, our mothers, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valeah, v'yeshomer ma'av bilha v'zilpa, all the potential neshamas of Haran. V'nishmat David HaMelech, and the soul of David HaMelech. U'bezeh yuvan, now we can understand, shehu tzrach lehisarev ba'orka ur kasdim. So now I'm going to tell you, that's why he had to be burnt in the fires of Ur Kasdim. How so? U'ke'en shebiser ha-magid la-Beit Yosef. Now he's quoting from another Kabbalistic source. The Beit Yosef, the Mechaber of our Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, wrote a Kabbalistic work, which was basically his conversations with a malach, with an angel, right? Ki la'achar she'yegi l'ram ha'mayla yizkeh le'hisaref al kiddush Hashem. That a person has the, if a person has the schus of dying, of being burnt al kiddush Hashem, if that happens, if that's his lot in life, that he was burnt at the stake, let's say, v'az yishayer ke'amar naki, then he becomes a holy sheaf. V'chein haya inyan haran. And that's what happened to Haran. Shenira shema shahayetach ha'seirabo ha'alef. The fact that he lacked the divinity in his depth, in his spirituality, shi'ad dveikut, attachment to God, zebo machmat, this was because she'az hayata sholetet klipat dor haflaga, shekol inyanam iruv, tovara, is because he was really, as much as he was spiritual, he was torn. He was also influenced by his generation, the generation of the tower. So here you have this spiritual person, Haran, living in the generation of the tower, and he was being influenced negatively by the generation. So now, imkein istalek alufo shel olam mi taman. So he lost, really, this this attachment to God. Ulechein hayata takanato. How do you solve his problem? How do you save Aram? So listen well. She yisrof be'esh al kiddush Hashem. If he dies, if he's burnt at the stake, so to speak, in the name of sanctifying God's name, that's going to save him. Af shemasarat mo al menat laasot lo nes, even though he did it to do a miracle. She'ein osin lo nes, a nes wasn't. Now, what does he mean? Mikol makom mevuar betargum Yonatan. Here's the other thing, the other interpretation of the story with Avraham and the burning kifshan ha'esh, the fiery furnace. Betargum Yonatan ben Uziel shehaya kiddush Hashem b'sreifato. There was a really a kiddush Hashem in the burning of Haran. How so? Sherabim hayu amrim, when Haran was standing there, Avram goes into the furnace. He comes out unscathed. Hare rabim hayu amrim al Avraham. What were people saying who saw this? Shaharan asa kishuv. Haran did some kind of abracadabra which saved Avram from the furnace. His brother's outside, you know, good guy, bad guy. Avram's in the furnace, Haran's outside. Haran did something and saved him. Shelo yishlot ha'esh ba'avram. So the fire wouldn't affect him. The kivin shenisraf Haran. So what did? They threw Haran into the furnace. They threw Haran into the furnace, right? They threw him in the furnace. So what happened? Shenisraf Haran. Haran was burnt. He was killed. Haya kiddush Hashem l'mafreya. It became retroactively a kiddush Hashem. It sanctified God's name in the sense that what? V'imkein hayelot, but then people realized that Avraham's coming out unscathed was an act of God. Was because Avraham was this pure representative of godliness and God performed the miracle. But until Haran was burnt, they questioned him. They challenged him. So Avraham, so ironically, the death of Haran really elevated Haran to a person of a kiddush Hashem. It restored the aleph, so to speak, to hey resh nun, in that it created a retroactive kiddush Hashem. So therefore, when that soul now came to Aaron, haya meir bo alufo shel olam. When Aaron received the soul of Haran, it was that soul which was put into the fiery furnace and perfected with the aleph as well. Okay? That's a very Kabbalistic, very Hasidic interpretation of what was going on here, but it gives us an insight into Haran. Not everything is black and white in the Torah. Haran was not such a bad person. Just like Lavan, as we'll see coming up. Lavan is called white. Lavan was an evil person, but he wasn't supposed to be. He had tremendous potential. That's why he's called Lavan, white. Right? Not Shachor, not black. But white, the purity of white. Okay? Now he concludes here with a little bit of a homily here. He says, Hineze halimud l'kol ish Yisrael. We can learn from this too, from this story. Sheba'od nishrash bo chelek hara. We have evil inside of us. You know, it's hard for the Aleph, the godliness, to shine out in us. It's very hard for us to constantly be attached to God. Because we have a Yetzer Hara. We're always in tension with the Yetzer Hara. Vizui tshuva. But this is the answer. Lemitonanim, to those people who complain, who frustration. Spiritually driven people, like everybody in this room, we get frustrated. You know, we want to keep moving forward. It's hard to move forward. You know, I had such a tremendous davening, but you know, an hour later I don't feel it anymore. Yontif is over. We felt so good, so powerful spiritually. But you know, as the further we move from Yontif, the less spiritual we become. We just get back into our old routine. Because the Yetzer Hara pulls us back. What's the Yetzer? He's not going to suggest to jump into the furnace. Metaphorically, he says, to get burnt a little bit with the fire of Torah. Get into the passion of Torah, the fire of Torah. Not literally physical fire, but the passion of Torah. The more you get into fire, purifies. The fire of Torah. Ubemet Shabbat Atzmo Mo'ilas. And I'll give you a practical example, he says. Take Shabbos, for example. Shabbat is an excellent place to start, he says. Ki HaShabbat Eim Mishtamshim Bi'ilan. You know that he's playing on words here. Shabbat, we're Eim Mishtamshim Bi'ilan. You're not allowed to climb a tree, halachically, because you might break a branch, you know. Eim Mishtamshim Bi'ilan is the term the rabbis use in the Talmud. But he's playing on that phrase. Ein mishtamshin bi'ilan, he wants to say, is a reference to the tree of knowledge, good and bad. On Shabbat, ein mishtamshin bi'ilan, the tree of knowledge, good and bad, can't touch us, right? Eitz hadat tov v'ra v'al korach Shabbat hu, you know, raza de'echad. Shabbat, you know, we can fight that yetzer very strongly. Ach, mihu she'yizkeh Shabbat b'shlemut. A person who merits a good Shabbos, ba'od mitz, you know, etc. etc. Gam lezeh ha'etzah rak libun be'eshet ha'raisa. Burn yourself a little bit in the fire of Torah. Ulu'umat ha'libun ba'ashad ha'raita in the fire of Torah zochel l'Shabbat. You'll get out. You'll have a good Shabbos. U'shneim ke'echet tovim. Okay, so that's practically bringing this Hasidic idea down to reality. Okay, one more piece here. Vayachal Noach Isha Adama, Vayitakeh. What did Noach do when he came out of the ark? He planted a vineyard. Right? After the whole episode, he was drunk, right? Vayesh minayan, he drank of the wine, Vayishakeh, Vayitagel, Betoch Allah. So what happened? An ugly scene, you know, at least on face value. That he got drunk and he was naked and his children had to cover him up and bring him back into his tent. What's going on here, right? So listen to, this is from Rav Schwab. And Rav Schwab has a different take on this. A fascinating idea. Yesh la'ayin, we have to ask ourselves, lama shata noach min hayayin? You know, why did he drink from the wine? Or, you know, the rabbis in the Medrash ask us, lama nata noach kerem v'chita haya lo li. He should have planted a wheat field, not a vineyard. You know, what was going on here? Right? So here he's asking, like, what happened here? Why did he drink from the wine? Eich nifshat arum b'toch ol. How in the world, how did Noah, who, you know, okay, whether you want to say he was the great tzaddik, the greatest, the way we started out this morning, but how could he sink to such a low level? Shalav hayat tzaddik tamim. He was such a tzaddik. V'im ken gam mitoch shichrut. Even if he got drunk, you know, we say that nichnas yayin yotzei sod. When a person drinks, the secrets come out, right? Rav Hutner, the great Rav Hutner used to say that there's a mechitza between the heart and the mouth. And when you drink a little bit, that it breaks down that mechitza. So the real person comes out.
What?
Very good.
Being out here, just as a famous saying.
Right.
When you're drunk,
the truth comes out. So good. So good people on Purim. Now, you don't see good people on Purim if they drink a little, whenever they have l'chaim. They don't start cursing and you know, and throwing bottles and breaking windows, right? You know, I remember as a bachur in yeshiva going to my rebbeim for Purim Suda, and after they would get high, what would happen? They would start darshaning and saying over Torah for an hour and a half nonstop, just speaking in Torah the whole time. That's what came out, right? So if Noah was such a tzaddik, how could he do this, right? V'haraya, he says, I want to tell you, she'achar she'kam miyeno, after he got it from his wine, haya mitnavei nevua gedola, al atido. The truth is, afterwards, he prophesied. Al shem cham v'yafin, I'm concerned, if you look into the parsha, you'll open up your chumash when you get home, and you'll take a look and see what he said afterwards. V'in kein nishar noach b'matzav shel gadlut. He really was the great Noach after he drank. So how do we understand this episode? V'higila madrevish on nevua. He reached a level of prophecy. You'll take a look in the psukim when you get home. Gam yesh la'avin ma shekinta ha'toro to ish ha'adama. And why does the Torah call him a man of the ground? That's not an accomplished phrase. He's a man of the earth, earthy. He's very earthy. You know, that's not necessarily a compliment to somebody, right? So here's this Rav Schwab's suggestion. Ulai, perhaps, yesh lomar, we can suggest. Shechashav Noach thought, Shebehamabul kfar nipa'er kol hara min olam. After the flood, all evil was destroyed. There's no evil left in the world. That means everything we do now has only positive connotations. V'achar ha'mabul, after the flood, nimtza olam b'matzav shel ha'tikun ha'gamur. The world is now re-perfected. Tikun olam. Kmo kodem chayt harishon, just like before the first sin. V'chishev, and he thought, shehigil ha'madregat ish ha'adama. So he thought he reached now the level of ish ha'adama, not a lowly level, an earthy guy, right? A farmer. Right, but isha adama shu kamo adam harishon shenivra min adama. He thought maybe he now returned to the level of adam harishon kodem achet, the ultimate isha adama. Right, ulechein. Therefore, natakerim. So he planted a vineyard. Vishatal yain. He drank wine. Why? Bechashvo shekfar lo yuchal yikashel bechet. Because he thought that he could now no longer get entrapped in sin. Why? According to one opinion, what was the Eitz Hadat? Right? Gefen Haya. It was a vine. According to one opinion in the Midrash, the Eitz Hadat was vine, was wine, was grapes. So now he thought he could, now things are different. Now he can even drink and eat from the Eitz Hadat. He planted the Eitz Hadat. It's a whole new world now. It's a brave new world. I'm the new Ish Adama, I'm the new Adam HaRishon. There's not going to be sin. We can now take from the Eitz Hadat properly. Nifshat Arum Mishikrato. And therefore he unclothed himself. Shenidma Be'enav Ke'ilu Higila Madregishal Vayu Shneim Arumi. Because he thought now he reverted back to that pure moment when Adam and Chava did not need clothing. There was no Yetzer Hara. So he was reverting back to Adam HaRishon. This was not some drunken lunatic taking off his clothing. This was a pure neshama who really felt he was returning to Adam HaRishon Kodem Achet. Ve'ein od tzorach lichsut basar. And there was no need to cover anymore. What a brilliant interpretation from Rav Schwab of what went on here. Okay, I just want to...